Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome back to another episode of Boots, Balls, and Bras. I'm with the same suspects here, Farrah Williams and Earth Pawn, otherwise known as the Crap Twins, which I don't know what that was reference to. Farrah is very excited this week because you bought a pair of rollerblades over the weekend. Days. First, we need to start with that, please. What's happening? What are you going to do? You just showed us some moves here.
Yeah, I mean, I can't wait. I'm thinking a BBB live on Insta or something. Earth has got roller skates. I can't skate.
No, I can't skate. Blade,
so, yeah, I thought I'd roll back the years, 24 years on since I last put a pair on.
Nice.
Bought myself a pair of Bowers. I mean, now I'm using the word Bowers. You know, they could have sponsored me a pair because they were like £200. Oh,
are they actually nowadays?
So they better be worth it because back in the day they were about 50 and I thought they were expensive back then. Right.
That's so, I'll bring my longboard skateboard.
I had Bowers, but mine was a Lost Property pair. It was like size 8 and I was like size 5, but they
worked. I kept my size 3 for about 10 years.
And Eartha, you have to run today because you're going to something really interesting. Share a bit about that.
Yeah, doing some work with Bernardo's, you know, me and young people trying to find strategies and just helping them with their theory of change. So, yeah, just seeing if we can find some solutions for young people. Again, not just inside of football, but outside of the game as
well. And if people don't know what that is, because I didn't know what it was, it's the...
It's like one of the biggest kind of youth-focused charities in the United Kingdom. Yeah. They deal with all sorts of things. They have centres. They run different programmes. Just added my two pence to it, the discussion.
So, and Bex, where are you going, Germany? Your Champions League, Germany, are you going?
Well, I was for my sins with the referees this past weekend.
I saw you there. Yep. I saw. Yeah. The lines were shadowed. They were shadowing each other. Yep. I didn't see.
Mm-hmm. They were. So I was, I was in the rain in my big jacket, freezing. They were whistling everywhere and flags going all over the place. And I just remember thinking, this is the exact reason why I never wanted to coach outside in the rain. But they work hard. It was a good session. Yeah. We had 2 days because they obviously had the match day yesterday on Sunday, I should say. But yeah, a lot of work. It's a lot of work, man.
They're up early. It's changing as well. I heard they're lightening off on the, or easing off, should I say, on the handballs in the penalty box. And
I don't know.
And you saw that at the weekend in the men's game. I don't know if you saw, but there was some VAR that a week ago would have been given.
Yeah.
This weekend they weren't given. Two in the same game that I was doing in the Villa.
It's so interesting, isn't it? Because all the stuff that's coming in, and it's just like that ever-changing process of football, because there were some laws of the games that were changed, which I didn't realize. When we were watching some clips, I'm like, what? It's this... Mm. Now, if you play back, if the ball gets played towards goal and there's a deflection by a defender and there's someone in the offside position, then it's still offside. But if it's with intent, if they're actually deliberately playing the ball by the defender, then it's not offside. But now the whole interpretation is it a deflection or is it deliberate?
That comes from the goal that got given at Newcastle or disallowed at Newcastle. Likely. Like, that's where it come from.
Likely.
Because it was a deflected. But my only thing around this is that how can you tell the person? So how can you tell me? You're the referee, Beck. Yeah. I'm the player. How can you interpret whether for me is intentional or unintentional? You can't.
It goes back to what you mentioned the other day, right?
In terms of unintentional.
No, but they can say, remember you was talking about knowing the player and knowing their characteristics and what they will do. Well, get me in the middle with that Fox 40 whistle, mate. I'm going to do the FA Cup final one day. You've heard it here first. I promise you.
Play on!
The next camp is August, about 8 days after the World Cup final. So you can come.
We could still be celebrating. So we might not be available. And then it's going to be Notting Hill Carnival towards the end. August ain't a good month, Bex.
And a lot has happened this week in football as well, because we had some announcements. We had the FIFA prize money for the Women's World Cup go up from 30 million in 2019 to 150 million. So only a 300% increase out of nowhere. And Gianni Infantino said, it's a historic journey for women's football and for equality because it will lead us to a path to equal pay.
Is it in line with inflation?
Pretty much.
Cost of living crisis. Wow. There we go.
Yeah.
Sorted.
And then we also saw the NWSL, the league in the US, announced their 23-24 season is going to be all on CBS platforms for free. So internationally free on their website. So anyone can watch NWSL, the league in the US. That's 176 matches for next season.
Can I ask a random question?
Get it.
In the US, do you have to pay TV license like you do in the UK?
No, what the heck was so that? It's I free. Got this letter when I first moved here and I was like, not yet paid. Found TV.
Literally.
Yeah. So she hasn't got a TV, she doesn't own a TV.
I didn't, yeah. For like 4 years, I was like, I'm not paying that. Yeah.
Well, you better pay it because I saw a stat actually this week that said, well, have a guess. How many? Well, maybe. I'm giving it away now, but a third of female prisoners in the UK are in prison for not paying TV licence.
That is jokes. That is jokes.
Female? I Why promise female? It,
because female pays the bills.
That was one of the things. They're the ones who usually open the door. So they're the ones who are usually charged. So a third of prisoners are in female prisoners.
But like it's a felony offense.
It's an offense. Yeah,
yeah.
If you don't pay your TV balance,
but like you go to jail.
As
for
in they
it.
Are in jail. I saw it on this
you
morning.
You better pay your. You better. I don't
have TV, guys. I don't even have one. Oh, that's bad. But okay, so you heard it here. Pay your TV bills, license, whatever it's called. And then we also saw the FA Cup. We had the quarterfinals this past weekend. Which was pretty interesting, actually. But we saw Lewis FC wearing shirts that said equal pay. They wanted equal pay from the FA to give prize money equal to men and women. Because as we know, Lewis FC, if you haven't heard, is the only, I believe, club in this country, at least, that pays their men's and women's clubs equally and also invests equally in their men's and women's, run by the wonderful Maggie Murphy. Thoughts on all of those things, because we also have in this country a new basically the FA now runs the league, right? They run the Barclays FA, WSL. And in other countries, you have sometimes private entities like the Premier League. So Premier League is not run by the Federation on the men's side. And in some countries around the world, also the Women's League is run by a private entity. So what the FA is doing right now is they've done a whole research project, which actually I was a part of. I did a little bit of research with that company, looking at what that new company should look like, having it run by an external, having it run actually as a company. So similar to the Premier League. Mm-hmm. And they're currently right now in that transition phase, which you know a lot about, Eartha, because obviously you sit on the FA board. Mm-hmm. So just looking at structures, you know, equal pay, how broadcast deals are run, things like that, you know, what types of things would you like to see in this new co, you would call it?
Well, I think we need to firstly keep a grips of our game. I think that's what's the most important thing.
Here.
Like, because we look at the Premier League and it's just a monster in itself, right? Mm. And we don't want to get to that point in terms of women's football. It's so different. There's so much other integral parts which just kind of keep the game grounded, and we don't want it to be so far away and removed from fans and clubs. Mm. And we look at, I guess, the things that we celebrate and the beauty around the game, like volunteers, like that help drive the game forward. We saw a recent announcement with Kelly Simmons retiring, who's been driving the game for over 30 years. And
that's a huge announcement. Mm. Too.
It's a huge announcement. And it's a worrying one. It's a worrying one.
Because I'm like somebody that has been so good in driving the women's game. And of course, we have our time. So I understand that we get older and we have our time and we feel like we can't move it any further. Mm. So it could be, I'm looking at it from two point of views. Yeah. Is it she feels like she's done all she can in terms of getting the game where it is? Or is she jumping, I'm getting out of this boat before it sinks, right? Because who knows where the game's going to go? Like, who knows how it's going to transition when it has a takeover? And it's been quite controlled. So the women's game has been controlled from as early as I know. Mm-hmm. So it's like one of those, because integral part of the FA and the women's game in terms of the growth. But for you can continue. Sorry, I thought I'd say that because that's how I feel about it. It's a bit one or the other.
I think I feel the same. And I think it's always scary, the unknown, right? And you can look back and say, oh, in hindsight, we should have did this or we should have done that. But I guess, as I said, and I said it last week, like we have to have more people who have been involved in shaping the game still being part of where the game goes to, because if we lose all that great information and knowledge, we're starting something new, and then that's not women's football in England, if that makes sense. Yeah. So how can we ensure that we get the best of what's currently there and the good practice and what we love around the game, and how do we stretch and challenge that to the next level? And again, you need the experts in the room to do that. It can't just be, I know a friend of a friend, and, and moving it that way, because as in a business model, we can make money, I guess. We can kind of market the game to go to where it needs to be, but how do we still make sure that it really is a game that fans want to come to, and we're getting new fans in, but we're not losing the beauty and the core, what people have grown and loved and are really proud of about, I think, in terms of the women's football here. So I don't really know. But I think the good thing is we keep having the conversation. Mm. We keep having that consultation and we keep listening. Yeah. I think that's a bit, when we stop listening and we start just driving the game forward, then we're going to find ourselves in a tricky situation. Mm. And I think when you talk about Kelly, like, yes, in terms of her being an executive and being on the board, but also she was quite sort of prominent on the ground and be like hearing from people within the game, in the coaching staff, from the players, from the academies then, and really trying to see what it's really like. What does a strategy look like in practice on the ground? And
it means something. It means something to her. Like, I'm saying, she was passionate about that in terms of driving that and making sure it was a success and it was growth and it was always on the the rise. So it was never, you know, and there were obviously times where the game stalled, etc. But I don't know. I just think it's worrying. Like,
The problem is
that the game's going so quickly now, right? The transition of that, and the women the Lionesses winning the Euros in the summer has obviously made, you know, all these broadcasts and sponsorships and whatever. Fuel. Yeah, rocket fuel. So now already that in itself, like, everybody just wants to jump on board, right? But how we get those sponsorships in and what we do with that and how, and then how we progress our league through that is where we need steady heads and not short-term thinkers. Because we, you know, as I mentioned it many of times, there's no point having the Lionesses talk about the future generation of the game. There might not be one if we just fast track something now and just want the short term success and short term, you know, banks filled with whatever sort of money. Of course, we want to be in a position where the players and coaching staff and all members of staff that are involved in the game are paid correctly, because currently they haven't, and that they work within an environment that is safe and whatever else, right? And the equipment there is needed for what is needed to grow the game, because currently at the minute it's poor. Yeah. So it's okay saying we want all this money, because for me at the minute, it's only about the Lionesses. The primary focus is the Lionesses. The primary focus isn't...
what do you mean? Where it should be?
By everybody. The primary focus isn't about the growth of the game. But what we also need to understand is that 20 or, say, 30, a group of 30 Lionesses cannot form a league.
Yeah.
So everybody else is just as important as the 30 Lionesses that are hugely important for our English, for our national team. We don't consider that, because whenever you go... FA, I know people that have been on these meetings. I know when club managers, when I was at Reading, and we go and they go to these FA meetings and whatever, their focus is purely around their national team.
Is that the selling point, though? That's the vehicle in terms of...
Yeah, but you can't just sell a product, right? If they cannot, 30 Lionesses cannot form a league.
No, they can't form a league. But what I'm trying to say is that's the thing in terms of the strategy.
The window shop.
They're the window
shop.
And then I guess, and this is where you need the people that are in the game who are also driving that rest of that ecosystem further down. But I think
I think we're losing that. I think we're losing them.
But that's what I'm trying to say.
I think we're losing those people.
We can't. But that's the whole point. We can't lose that piece. And I think what's really important around women's football is people that have been in the game, they believe. Like, whether there was investment, whether there was not, like, they loved it because they loved women's football. Yeah. And they knew if you had that investment and if there was better resources, the game will naturally progress because the talent's there. How do you still have those people who want to drive it because they know... Number one, it's the right thing to do, but actually the impact, the wider impact it has, yes, on the Lionesses, yes, in terms of more girls and boys playing at a grassroots level, yes, in terms of the social impact, in terms of obesity and making more people. There's so many different aspects grassroots that this game can potentially do. And that's why it upsets me when people say, oh, football is different to society. It's not. I think football is, if not the biggest driver in terms of, in the UK anyway.
Oh, in UK, in a
change maker.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we can't underestimate it. So we have to get it right. And when we have a chance to implement...
Shape it.
and shape great things, whether not just what we see on the pitch, but all the other bits that happen behind it. We have to have the right people, not just in the room, but speaking up.
That's just the thing. It's having the right people to shape it, just not just on the pitch stuff.
Because the on the pitch stuff is
the easy part. The bigger picture.
The big picture is what you're talking about.
Who's going to say no in that boredom? Who's going to say that's not the right thing for women's
sport?
I think Kelly would.
She would.
I think you're right, though. In this country in particular, football is sort of like a religion, isn't it? So in terms of like being able to shift culture. Especially in this room, for at least 2/3 of this podcast. But I mean, we did a Women's World Cup in Jordan in the Middle East where Prince Ali was the head of the FA, and he empowered all these women to run the tournament. It was under 17 girls tournament. First time they'd ever seen hijabs being played on an international stage. Mm-hmm. First time we had accessible stadiums in anywhere in the Middle East because we rebuilt the stadiums. And just seeing the impact of a country in the Middle East watching and cheering for under 17-year-old girls in the middle of everything going on around them, as we all know, was just like, I mean, I still get chills today and it still chokes me up to see the impact that that had in that region, more importantly than not just in Jordan. So absolutely, totally agree with that. The other thing about this new company, though, that I think is really interesting is that when you extract a league or an entity from the FA, you can also extract to some level, and depending on how it's set up, the politics involved. And by that, what I mean is that, you know, the FA by definition is a political body. It's a governing body. So there are politics around it. You know, it gets funded by FIFA and the Confederation, by UEFA. And so therefore it is tied to different things. Whereas if you set up a new business, then you can look at it as a business, and you will have obviously the FA being involved with their golden ticket or their vote or whatever it is that how they're going to be involved. But for me, that really is a good look at professionalizing the league and really taking it to the next level from a business standpoint. So getting rid of all the politics that on all of those strings that are attached and actually looking at getting in people that can look at things from a totally fresh perspective coming from entertainment. Or you look at what Angel City did, coming from tech, the tech industry, and bringing in really amazing business talent.
Does that take away
that bits? Can help
name
but
branding
still,
branding in terms
but
of
still
name.
Keeping you know the FA and the people that are involved an Eartha potentially
no I just mean you know like in the US because obviously there we talk about here so often in our country, can we compete with the men's in terms of financially, will it ever get to where the men's is, right? I don't believe it ever will in the UK, but we know how big it is in the US, right? But they are branded differently. They have like investors that invest in a team and they make their team name up and they have their own team shirt and
it's
whatever.
A different model,
so to do that here now, the only team, if I'm right in thinking, here in the UK is London City Lionesses, where a business took over. They used to be Millwall Lionesses, and they went bankrupt, and then a businessman or whatever, whoever it was, come in and took them over. Am I right in thinking that if that was to happen and we did put it over to these investors, they would then want to take away the name, which then takes away the link that these women's teams here in the UK have to their men's team, which
like
is a big driving force.
Liverpool,
now changing that,
are you talking about changing the names of the clubs?
Because of investors coming in, they might want to use their own.
As far as I know, that's not the structure. So in the NWSL, you have franchises, so people can come in and actually buy a club, and like the Washington Spirit, which
and then they can get bought out right after
then,
3 years.
Yeah, and they run the club as their own business, as its own franchise. So they clearly have to play by the rules of the NWSL that are set. But then they can also, they are autonomous in different things like branding, in sponsorship and things like that. But they still are part of the NWSL. Whereas here, you have Man United, Liverpool. Like, they're not going to change that. And the clubs are actually going to be the main stakeholders of the league.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's all great. Okay. Yeah. And in terms of the business model. But what happens is when that flies and it's doing so well, what happens to tiers 3, 4, 5, 6, 7?
Guess what?
But that's the
Nobody
issue, though.
Cares.
No, but they have
that
to.
That is the problem.
No, but women's football
do care.
Exactly.
We do care.
But this
but
is my whole
outside
point.
Outside of that, outside of people that have really pushed the game for many years, these people don't care.
No, but they have to. But this is the whole
but
point.
They don't.
As part of that those decisions going forward, they have to think of those other teams. There are aspirational teams who are trying to climb the ladder, who are trying to get up, who's trying to get in the league. There's teams who just like participation. They just want to be part of it. So we want to make that product good, but not so good where then you then get an FA Cup draw and this club that's doing really well in the early rounds goes up, earns a bit of money that helps to invest in the club, and then they get beat 15-0 because they've gone to another level. Yeah. So we have to think of it as
the full pyramid.
It has to be the full pyramid, and you have to have people around the room that's going to have those. That. Yeah, not, it's not. It's not even an uncomfortable conversation. This is what has driven our game. This is our game. And yes, we want the expertise in terms of how you can help to grow that, but we have to keep the fundamentals.
Yeah. And my argument to that would be, I agree 100%. And if you bring in smart business people, they'll see that you need that funnel. You need that player pathway. You need the coaching pathway. You need to invest a lot more in refereeing, a lot more in match officials, because that is the pathway to make the top better anyway. So, you know, depending
on... It's a hybrid. Yeah. It's not just one way or the other.
And seeing how the money filters down into the rest of football, which is still will still be run by the FA, is a really interesting one.
But even on that prize money, like London, Lewis around prize money, equal prize money or whatever.
It's a different baseline budget.
Yeah, I was going to say that. So like sponsorships that sponsor, say, the men's FA Cup compared to the women's, already the prize pot is already bigger from the investment that he's already put in.
Which is, so you're talking about the men's FA Cup and the women's FA Cup.
So they're basically, obviously, Lewis are a team that pay equally men and women. Right. So they were both at the quarterfinal stages, and they would have won equal pay to a men's team that was getting a payout for getting or reaching the quarterfinals or progressing to there. It's not going to happen. Because currently the funding behind each of these, even though it's the same cup, in terms of people that invest in each of those cups, the prize pot is different. There's far more sponsorships at the men's FA Cup than there ever is at the women's. So already the starting point for the women's is a lot less.
Yeah.
You can't just get money and grab it out of the air or take it off the trees. You can't do that.
So is there a piece of work to do then?
There's growth, of course.
There's a piece of work in terms of sponsorships.
Sponsorship, of course.
So it's not going to come from domestically.
Always going to be the problem in the women's game is getting these sponsorships in. Because you can't just get money from nowhere. And also, you think about it, shirt sales or, I don't know, all the merchandise, all that. You think of Gates. I mean, look, you've got Lewis asking for equal prize money, say for Man United who played against Fulham, right? They probably got 70,000. They probably got 700 already. The gate fees that are coming in, like, it's completely different. You pay £10 maximum for a ticket at Lewis. You pay minimum, I'm going to say £50 at United, probably even more.
Yeah.
And arguably, right? So on average, you're like, or £100 probably on average.
No, but isn't the prize money in terms of...
No, but I'm just saying, you've got to get something backward in that as well. Like, it is a separate pot, but it's through sponsorship, no?
No, but I'm trying to say, it's about the competition generating more money, because it doesn't matter if you've got 100,000, because it's saying, like, each round, it's worth, like, if you win this round, you get 100,000.
But how can you just generate money? There's no money.
No, but I'm trying to say, that's what I'm trying to say. It has to be from those external sponsors. It has to be, like, for example, Vitality has to say, we want to... We value the men's FA Cup and the women's FA Cup the same. Emirates, so we want to pay the same as Emirates, because... We want to watch the FA Cup.
Vitality, for example, they'll sponsor the men's FA Cup, and I don't know, say they give 10 million. They'll sponsor the women's FA Cup, and they'll probably give 500,000.
Yeah. And why? And so, I think the important question is why? Because if you look at the difference, it's also in broadcast. So it's not just sponsors saying, I'm going to give, right? But the FA Cup is shown on different channels at different times, and arguably they'd be better times and more viewership. So, and this is that like cycle that is so hard to break, because men's football or football has always been built by men, for men to play, for male referees, so it's mostly male fans, but it's been going for so long that it has such a stand that these broadcast cycles are bought 4-6 years out in advance. So then you bring in women's football and you're trying to piece in, where can we fit into this thing where the money's already been spent and it's big money. So trying to get into those broadcast slots is one issue as well, but arguably, is it, should the money be going in as prize money, or should we be looking more at like what you're talking about, grassroots investment at the lower level, so that we can make the product better, that we can, you know, make it more valuable? Because if I'm a sponsor, I'm clearly going to have to pay more money to a more valuable product. And there's no argument that men's football is more valuable than women's on the what would you call it, on the criteria that we measure, the metrics that we measure value currently, which is broadcast, viewership, you know, social media following, all of these things.
It's funny that you say that. So the women's national team, when I played, our prize money through the rounds in the World Cup or the Euros, right? And Hope was in charge at the time. And obviously Hope's wanted the game to be sustainable. She wanted to grow the youth development, hence why, you know, the better the senior team did, the more 16s we got, 18s, a 23 squad, or whatever. So that went into the grassroots or the foundations of the game.
Right.
So a big chunk of the prize money would go to the FA to invest in that. And so the players would get pretty much nothing.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So our bonus from tournament football was crap, really crap. Don't work like that now, because the prize money for the Lionesses is far greater than it ever was before. Because most of the money goes back into the players now, as opposed to thinking about the foundation.
It's the same as FIFA. Just quickly, you know, those 32 teams that are getting much more money, that's just going to create a much bigger gap to the rest of the world. So is that helping? Is that helping, really, women's football grow?
Well, I can only relate this in terms of the FA Cup. The prize money, obviously, this year has gone up.
Yeah.
And what they've done is actually they've allocated more money to the earlier rounds, where actually the teams from the lower levels of the pyramid are going to be playing those games, because actually the teams higher up, yes, they want the prize money, but it's not as significant for them. So for the earlier rounds, there's more money.
50 grand could mean a lot.
Exactly.
So or 20 grand could mean a lot.
So, so they've injected a lot more further down.
You can buy three players at that level.
And then further up, as now the WSL Championship get introduced, then obviously they get less money, because the other teams would have played more rounds, which means they could have earned more, generated more funds over those different preliminary rounds.
Which is great.
And has that investment. But
Which you can do in the FA Cup, because you include every, it's not just WSL and Championship, it's everybody.
That's why the FA Cup is the best cup in the world.
It's the biggest cup in the world
for that reason.
All right, well, that's really interesting. I think we're going to keep an eye on this, on the new co-takeover, what the structure is, how it is. You know, I know the people coming in are looking at it, and we know that they're doing a good job and asking all the questions, and I hope that the clubs play along as well, like you said, because I think that's part of the issue is that you get some clubs that just want money for themselves and they're going to fight in their corner for the good and the growth of their own club versus what's good for the women's game. And I think that has to be checked. Well, that was a very interesting first half.
Bring the oranges in.
Oh my day.
Half time.
Half time to you talk. Going into the FA Women's Cup quarterfinal. I heard that the FA Women's Cup is the best cup in the world. Is that right?
In the world.
The FA Cup in general is the best, yeah. No, it is. I mean,
why?
It just is. It just gives everybody, you know, any young, I guess, male or female player that actually wants to step into the game at conference level, an opportunity to progress and play maybe against an idol or whatever it might be, depending on the draw. So I just think it gives people hope that love football.
Yeah.
I mean, I dreamed of it every single day as a footballer, as a kid on my estate playing Wembley knockouts.
Exactly, I was about to say, Ben.
I used to play Wembley knockouts, whether it be single, doubles, whatever it might be, to get to the final. And it felt real. It felt like it was real. Like it was a tournament where, you know, there would be one goal, there would be a goalkeeper in goal, and you could play it with however many players. There'd be, keeper would boot it out, say there's 10 players.
Yeah. There's not 10, there's 100.
Yeah, so I'm just going to say 10. And what happens, you score one goal within that, so it kicks out, it's all against all, so it's whoever's got the ball has to try and score. Yeah. You score, you go and sit out until the next round. And then it obviously leaves two until it gets down to the last two. Whoever scores, that player gets knocked out, and it goes down into a final.
Fun. And Farrell used to
goal hang. I am goal hanging.
Goal hanging at the beginning.
Everybody used to go and chase the ball. So everybody used to, there's no offside in this.
There's no offside, just stand by the goalkeeper.
Ball, but cherry when somebody picking. Would shoot, shoot. I'm like,
rebound.
So that cherry was picker. Like, getting to, of course, to get to the final, but it's and then the dream of obviously walking at the time, the steps to Wembley and lift the cup.
Farrah, can I just ask a question on that? See if you blocked a ball and it deflected it.
Are you going? I'm through. I am running. You know that already. I'm through.
Mate, and that's why our I'm school through. Uniforms were ripped, because we used to be literally diving everywhere.
On the goal line.
Perfect. The best cup
Speaking of good goals.
Yeah, well, Lewis, mate.
Emily Kraft, she's a German-Irish international footballer.
Jake won't be happy, will she?
No, like they said, you don't save those. What a strike. You could tell as soon as she
they're the moments, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You think like she's going to live with that now. She can continue when she retires in years on.
Kraft.
She'll come back to her kids or grandkids or cousins, niece, whatever it might be, and go, I scored a spectacular goal, a worldie
FA Cup
against Manchester United. So it's what dreams are made. Like, whatever.
She's got every paper cutting of that, I promise you.
She'll be in local newspapers or whatever, and she can go and just get that, clip it off her BBC. And she's now got this clip of her
that could be her promo tape for WSL.
Mate, of course.
She's got it signing just
over
goal.
And over and over.
But it's true. Yeah. I mean, even like you think of like obviously Brighton, they've progressed through to the tournament. So I mean, if it was a men's game, normally the semi-final is now played at Wembley. I like the fact that in the women's game, we still don't play the semi-final at Wembley.
You like that.
Because
you
I like the fact the that Wembley is like, you've got to work hard to get and play at your national team stadium. Like, how many people get the opportunity to play at Wembley? Not many. And that's what the FA Cup provides, an opportunity for the best teams or the lucky teams at the draw, whatever it might be, to get there, an opportunity.
Mate, the strike was good. It was a good strike.
Yeah. But you think she's with the Republic of Ireland, so she'll be representing Fogo as well in the World Cup.
They've got a history of scoring goals. Remember that Puskas goal, that Abigail that scored the Irish
goal? Oh, yeah, Irish goal. She got
goal of the year.
Yeah, remember?
I can't remember. St. Patrick's Day, that's why she scored that good goal.
Oh, yeah, there you go, look.
She must have had a Guinness on the Friday. That's what it is.
But what about Aston Villa, by the way? Upsetting Man City?
Yeah.
Like, okay, I can see Eartha rolling her eyes out, but that's an upset because people predicted Manchester City to go through.
Yeah.
Rach Daly scoring again.
English striker.
Yeah, but still, are going to say she's not going to be an international striker. Okay, come on,
I'm going to put this question out to our viewers.
She's scored
twice
in international matches recently.
Beautiful. I'm going to ask.
She is an international striker. She's playing striker at the international level and scoring goals.
This is a question for our viewers, right? And so whoever listens to our pod, right, we want answers back to this one question I'm going to put out there. Okay? You are playing top four countries in the world.
Yeah, right? Who are they?
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Whoever you might think it might be. Who I would probably say, I don't know, you're going to go probably Spain. I would say probably Germany, America, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just going to go England, right? So you're going to play these top teams. My question is, in those moments, semi-finals, who do you start with? Russo or Rachel Daly? Okay, that's all I'm going to ask.
Okay.
Because no one is saying that Rachel Daly can't play as a striker. Right. And I believe she can play against these top teams. Mm-hmm. But my question is, if the public had a vote as to who they think...
Okay, we're going to put it out.
Yeah, we'll
we're going to do it. We're going to put it on our socials.
And I genuinely think because of that, Serena will go with Russo.
Yeah.
Because of... She has more attributes as a striker in the international setup that suits Serena's style of play.
But if she can't play 90 minutes of every game over the 7 matches in the World Cup...
Why can't she?
I'm just saying, if she can't...
Oh, Rachel Daly can play. I think Rachel Daly will be second choice striker.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I genuinely think she's second choice striker. I mean, you can't not have
her
as a
striker. So she can be an international striker.
Oh, no one says she's not. My point is that if she wants to play regular international football, I think she would have been perfect for left back.
To start.
Right, to start every game, like she did in the Euros. And for me, was phenomenal, by the way.
She was phenomenal.
She probably had one off half.
Yeah.
You know, which people spoke about, you know, defensively, she wasn't great. But in a six-game tournament, you have 45 minutes of bad defending.
I want her on my left.
So for me, I'm saying you want your best players in the team.
Yeah, yeah.
She makes the team stronger with her as a fullback.
Mm.
So I understand that your preference is as a striker.
Mm.
But sometimes you just, at international level, you got to go, actually, it's the same. Like Anita Vasanta, like, I loved her. And she could play anywhere. She could play centre mid or as a centre half. When she played alongside me in centre mid, I felt great because she's so calm on the ball.
Mm.
But I also thought her best position was a centre half. Yeah. I don't think there was anybody like her as a centre half. She was playing the modern day game now, 20 years
back
ago, back in the day.
Back in the
back. Bringing the ball out
too.
From the back, composure, she was just a
splitting
natural.
Lines.
Yeah, she could do all of that back then, which was probably not appreciated. But I think if she'd have played centre half, she'd have probably played more times for England than she actually did. Mm. I think she played 64 maybe or something.
And when you look at the back line, though, you've got a Lucy Bronze, who some tout as the best right back on the planet, and very, very offensive, very aggressive, very fast, can cover the whole pitch and then some, you know, probably runs 3 to 4 times more than most players on the pitch. And then you've got the two centre backs, Leah and Millie, potentially Millie Bright. And then, so the argument is, do you need another left back that is like a Lucy that can go forward, that's attacking, or do you need more strikers, because that's where I think Lionesses are a bit weaker. I mean, they've lost Ellen White, you know, they've lost Jill Scott, they've lost some experience.
But they've got goals from the middle, though. I think in terms of the rotation is so good. They got two.
Frank Kirby's fit.
They got him.
That's a big question mark. Georgia Stanway.
Kelly Stanway. They get goals from that. Yeah. They've got goals. Mm. That's the issue. They've got goals in other places. So it's not an urgency to have Daly up front, because there are goals throughout the pitch. I think in terms of shutting up shop and making sure defensively we're not leaking any goals, then the rest is just about what can we do at the other end, as long as we're tight at the back. And apart from really set plays, I can't really see England being broken down.
I thought by too many teams. Alex Greenwood too, I think she's been absolutely solid.
I like her I like her as a left side centre half. What about people's comments around Chelsea playing a B team against Reading is still going through? Didn't want to see the lineups. They had four debutants in that game. Yeah. They brought them on as subs. They brought three kids on that were 17 years of age.
And they are amazing, by the way. I watched them at the night Premier Cup.
They brought three 17-year-old players on, and another young player made a debut in a game. And Kelly Chambers at the end said they gifted the game to, she wasn't happy with her team, they gifted goals to Chelsea. Mm. And I saw the feedback and comments from fans that said, but it was Chelsea B team. You gifted Chelsea B team a win. But it was, again, look.
But
they're
even
going into
Chelsea's B team.
The fact, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. The fact that you're going into a quarterfinals and you're able to rotate that many players. Sam Kerr didn't even need to come onto the pitch, and they won the game 3-1. So Lauren James, these players didn't play. But then I said to Eartha, once I saw the four teams that were going through, I said, and I'm going to put it out there, Man United and Chelsea will avoid each other in the semi-final because they would obviously want a Wembley final of Chelsea-Man United. Now, could there be an upset?
Aston Villa
home to Chelsea.
And then we have Man United at home to Brighton.
Could there be an upset?
I don't think there'll be an upset in any of those.
You've heard it here first.
It would be so funny if it was, because I know obviously we, and it looks better. Of course, Man United Chelsea Cup final would look amazing at Wembley, whatever fans, but it's so predictable that at semi-final stage, they really do try and get the big teams to avoid each other. So it was interesting that me and Eartha was on the phone yesterday saying we're going to avoid each other. Wake up this morning and they have done.
I'm going Brighton Villa.
All right, you heard it here first.
You know what, Eartha? You heard it here first. You set yourself up to be absolutely shot right back down.
Brighton did win. They beat Birmingham in the FA Cup quarterfinal, but we've got the semi-final coming up, and that is going to be a big one. You heard it. Chelsea, Aston Villa, Man United, Brighton. And as far as Earth is concerned, it'll be Aston Villa, Brighton going into the final.
Let's hear what you guys think.
Yeah.
Villa fans and Brighton fans, do not let me down.
All right. That wraps up our halftime team talk. Heading into our second half. I love these weeks, you guys. UEFA Women's Champions League finally starting. they've got their own little song there that they had made themselves. But we're going to do a little bit of a preview for you, just in case you were out of the mix since last year, because it's been a while since we've seen these teams play each other. I'm still sort of remembering that Arsenal win over Lyon, where I was actually commentating for DAZN, and just like, it was a dream. It was just such a nice game to watch. But now we've got Bayern playing Arsenal tonight at 5:45. We've got Roma playing Barcelona, Lyon versus Chelsea. That's going to be a huge match on Wednesday night. And PSG Wolfsburg also on the Wednesday night. What are you guys thinking about Bayern-Arsenal? Bayern beat
this
Barcelona.
This is big.
I think these are one of those teams that we know them because Georgia Stanway is playing on the team, right? And so obviously English fans are following the Bayern team maybe a little bit more than, but they have good players and they are looking really good and they're close to the top now in the Frauen-Bundesliga, whereas 4 weeks ago they were 8 points down from Wolfsburg. So their confidence is high.
The Euro final replay, right? Germany versus England.
But Eartha, the thing is with Bayern, they don't concede. Right, so defensively they're very good and they score goals, so they rarely concede a goal. I think in the last maybe six games or whatever they conceded one, And then the goal before that conceded was against Barcelona. Mm. So they don't concede many goals. They're hard to break down. They're German in general. They're structurally set up defensively very well, can counter-attack, can play possession-based football, or that, as I say, they can that transitional game, which is better suited to German style of play. But I just don't know. It's difficult because, I mean, yes, Arsenal are back to where Arsenal were a little bit after winning the Continental Tires Cup against Chelsea, but that's only been two games.
Mm. I think set plays are going to be important.
I don't know if it's come too soon for Chelsea in terms of their rhythm and momentum. Arsenal, as to like off the back of the couple of games that they've played. Whereas Bayern, they're flowing at the minute. They're in a good stride.
Yeah.
So their momentum's with them and they're at home.
Their carbo loading needs to be amazing.
Arsenal need to deliver the game that they delivered against Lyon.
Yeah.
When they battered them away.
Yeah.
Or that first half performance they had against Chelsea. They need to get to that level if they are to get anything from this game tonight. It's tonight. So if they are to get anything from the game tonight, I believe that's what they need to do because Bayern don't concede goals.
I think they have to be at their best, like you said. They have to be at their best. They can't have any off day. Everyone has to be ready, raring to go. And yeah, like you said, you see Bayern domestically are just doing the damn thing. And I think for me, I can't see Arsenal doing it across two legs. But I could be wrong. I think that their home fans and their home support in the second leg is going to be super important. And I think that will definitely play a role when you get there. But it's what do they go there with? What do they bring to that next game in terms of the scoreline? And if they've already lost it from the first leg, then it's too far gone. But if they stay in the game, then they could have a chance.
And I think that's the hardest thing about this game tonight is actually that the first match is in Bayern.
Mm-hmm.
Because like you said, I think Arsenal psychologically has been all over the show this season, if we're really honest. In the last couple games, good, solid, very good. It felt like they just pulled their socks off, up. They still need them. Yeah, no, they can keep those on, thanks. Stinky socks too. No one needs those taken off. But really came together as a team, like as the players and as a squad, and looked each other in the eye and just went, come on, like we need to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it's felt like the last couple games. But again, going over to Germany.
They don't lose, do they, at home?
Playing in that stadium, the Allianz Arena as well, which is a big exciting stadium. It's a beautiful stadium.
Did you see the ad? Did you see the little like social ad, I'm saying, with Mane and Georgia Stanway?
No.
Like calling up and like texting, oh, you're going to be at the Allianz. Have you seen it? Oh, that's pretty nice. Cool. Yeah.
That's fun.
So they did a nice like.
And they do that. With the Bayern team is like, because the women have a really amazing setup. They have all these pitches and they train with the what they would call the amateur and the amateurs, the ones just below the men's team. But they do have a lot of interaction with that men's team, which I think is great. Yeah. Cool. So I think it's going to be a psychological battle. So I think it'll be really interesting. This is like the test for Arsenal this week to see where are you actually now. You've gone through ups and downs, you've had some nice wins, you have some silverware, but what are you going to bring to Bayern?
Yeah, agreed, because as I said, they're tough. Even when Barca went there, they didn't beat them.
Was that this
last
year?
Year?
No, last year. November, October.
But I'm just saying, like, there, like when you think of Wolves, but they don't lose at home in Europe.
Yeah,
like home is their territory.
Oh, when Barcelona went to Wolfsburg.
So I'm just saying, German teams, they don't lose at home.
Yeah,
like, they genuinely don't. They're so strong. But this game tonight is one that I'm excited by.
I think same.
It's probably the most competitive in terms of
It could be. Yeah,
and both of our teams are still in it, Wolfsburg and Barcelona.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, you've got an easy draw.
Here we go. Don't be so silly.
You got Roma. They see Roma.
Don't
which is cool
Roma.
Because it was Juventus. It was always Juventus, Juventus, Juventus. And then Roma's sort of not come out of nowhere, but they're qualified and they've got some great players.
They're going to be eager, new, fresh, proven a point, ready to just attack against Barcelona. And then.
What have you had for breakfast? Like this girl,
something a bit off. Huh?
I don't know what you had. Did your milk okay this morning?
I promise you, it's not an easy game. Come on, no one gets this far without playing. It's just maybe Barcelona is just a different type of team and have a different caliber of player, but it's not. It's not. You're going on like it's a bye. Like it's not
a bye.
Oh my god,
it's a bye.
It's a bye.
Barcelona have got a bye to the next round.
Bye bye.
Yeah. All right. On to the next game then. Lyon Chelsea.
Tasty. Can Chelsea do what Arsenal did to Lyon?
Yeah.
Yes.
I like that they've done that. Yeah. You know, that they've had that precedence of actually smashing Lyon.
Yeah.
they're the holders.
Yeah.
Mm. Never write Lyon off. Like, they got voted off for a couple of years or whatever. They went on it. How many times did they won Champions League? Champions League Cup is Lyon's. Like, when you talk about the Women's Champions League, you think of Lyon, right? Yeah. When you think of the Men's Champions League, you think of Real Madrid. Yeah. I think that's equal. I think they're like that on that level where
even
like
more for Lyon,
think,
right?
Of course. Yeah. When you think of the Champions League, regardless of what's going on domestically, which Lyon normally batter their league, you think of Lyon.
Yeah.
And so this is, even psychologically for Chelsea, a big game.
So, but question on that psychologically, because you had Wendy Renard stepping back, Diani stepping back, and Katoto, who, was it Katoto?
Yeah.
Yeah, who I think is coming back from an ACL anyway. But now they've got rid of their coach, the Lyon coach, the French coach, Diacre, and they're looking at like restructuring all of that. Do you think that that will play any part in their club football? Like, do you think that that's affected them? Because clearly Wendy Renard, one of the best players on the whole planet in the history of the game as well, doesn't just like step back from the game willy-nilly without having thought about that for months and have probably endured quite a lot, and then now it's all changing. And so do you think that they'll come out more confident because they sort of got what they want, or do you think that it's going to be, you know, something that's been weighing on them for months, or do you think that will affect them at all because it's Lyon, completely separate from France?
I think they're professionals, isn't it? They get, when they get on the line, they do what they need to do. But I think in terms of that psychological edge, it could be a weight lifted off their shoulder in terms of they haven't got that to worry about. But I'd like to think, no matter what, that they're focused on their game in terms of domestically anyway. And yeah, like I said, they've got that history of being the champions. It's something that they're not going to want to give up lightly. They can actually stake a claim, because Chelsea has been so dominant and has been for a long time in what's seen as the biggest league in the world. And for them to beat them and not being playing that great domestically and still being able to beat this dominant champion, this, do you know what I mean, this beast of a sort of squad, what does that say then about them in terms of them kicking on and continuing, not just in the Champions League but again domestically? So I think it'll be great. I think they'll get a lot of benefit psychologically if they are able to beat Chelsea, because I expect Chelsea in the home leg to be a lot more dominant. So
look how rested they rested.
Yeah, that's what I was going
to
say.
So they rested the big players to be able to go come work both ways, good or bad, because now they haven't had a game for the last, nine days or whatever. Yeah. So, yeah, it could work both ways. But again, we all thought at one stage Lyon was unbeatable at home and Arsenal went over there and dominated. So Chelsea will be looking at that and going, they are beatable on their own backyard. So they'll go there with confidence for sure. But I do think that the return leg at Chelsea will be the one where the game's won or lost.
Yeah, this next week on the 29th, 30th. And then we've got PSG Wolfsburg.
Tasty.
Yeah, I mean, I love the quarterfinals. I just love the quarterfinals because you're like, there's not a bad game besides the bye that you're calling from Barcelona. But actually, when Barcelona went to Bayern, I think they had thought that that would have been an easier game. And obviously, they lost 3-1, I believe it was the score. So, you know, I think mentally, they're one of those teams where, you know, people want to beat them. Mm-hmm. Everyone is always bringing their best A game to against Barcelona because they think they have to. But PSG Wolfsburg, I think Wolfsburg won't have too big of an issue, but I think it'll be a close game.
And is it on the same that you mentioned in terms of the impact psychologically from the French team? Again, the Spanish players at Barcelona, they haven't resolved the issues. So can that have an impact in terms of where they are still in terms of their performance? So, yeah, it's not a bye. It's a great
squad
of players.
And Wolfsburg's looking good. They're still at the top of the table and still looking good. PSG, I haven't seen a lot from them. I haven't heard a lot from them. They seem to be ticking over. This season,
it's the same as don't they had them one-off games against Lyon where they get a good result, but I think when they played them they lost to them, didn't they? I think it was 2-1 they lost to Lyon this year, earlier in the year. But they're there, they're getting closer to Lyon for sure, they are. But I still don't think they're that dominant force yet in Europe.
They have 53 points,
so they don't strike me as somebody that's going to go on and win the Champions League. I wouldn't put them in my top four if it was to start the Champions League to go on and win it. But Yeah,
there was a time when team. A lot of players like moved from Lyon to PSG
to try and shift the league. Yeah. And that's why I think their league's more competitive in terms of those top two. But yeah,
it feels like they've all shifted back to Lyon back again.
They want to win trophies. Yeah, and they know that they can do that, and they can do that in Europe and be successful with that.
Yeah. PSG has 53 points in the league, and Lyon has 64. So that's 11 point spread. That's massive.
Yeah. And if they don't win, at least their Nike and Jordan collab is fire. So.
You wear that like we'll every other that. Week,
we'll,
don't you?
We'll take that. We'll take that for now.
Yeah. Funny. All right. Well, that pretty much wraps up our Champions League quarterfinal preview. We'll be watching tonight and tomorrow.
Come on, Chelsea.
Games.
Come on, Arsenal.
Come on, Barca.
Come on, Wolfsburg.
No, we're English. Come on, man. We've got to support our teams, guys.
Come on, Arsenal.
Send us who you guys think is going to win Champions League. Just before we end, do you still think Wolfsburg is going to win? Yeah. And do you still think Barcelona is going to win it? From the French who live in Barcelona and speak Catalan. Yeah. Right. I think Wolfsburg has a good chance as well. Those are our predictions. Let us know what you guys think. And on to our extra time. This is the fun bit, taking all your questions. We're going to go through these really quickly, although we had one question from Nelly McKenzie _, who said, do you think women's football will ever be as big as men's? And I said, oh, that's a good question. And I got from my two wonderful supportive colleagues, what? Absolutely not. What do you guys think?
Exactly that.
Nope.
Absolutely
no,
not.
No, it's just the franchise is just so big. It's the main sport. Global sport.
Yeah.
There's no other sport, even in terms of like men's sport, that can even rival men's football, let alone the women's game. Yeah. Yes, I think it will definitely progress. And obviously before the game was banned, there was thousands and thousands of fans. So there is space for growth.
Yeah.
But when you look at it in terms of the male product, it's not going to happen.
I agree. I just think, the men's football in the UK for sure sits out somewhere on its own, out here somewhere.
Yeah. Well, over there, somewhere behind.
And the challenge is that can we get closer to other men's sports in our country as opposed to trying to even get anywhere near that? And that's why I hate whenever the women's and men's game in the UK is compared. It's just stupid to even
mention that.
Yeah, it frustrates me because we all know it's never going to get there. Yeah. Are we going to grow? Is the game going to get bigger? For sure.
Yeah.
It has to.
Yeah.
But... yeah, let's just not
and,
talk
and
about
that's
that.
Why I wanted to join a men's team and be the first player to play for Man United, because the women's is never going to be anywhere near there. So I just thought the best players are playing in the men's
and
league.
And let's hope we're wrong. Let's hope we're wrong. But go on, you have a different perspective.
I think
on
you guys
it.
Are wrong, actually. And I'm talking about
2-1.
It feels like a theme on this podcast. No, but I think you guys are wrong. And the reason for that is because globally, I think that the women's game has a much bigger value for the future, because if you look at where the trends are, so you look at the biggest growth right now in sports, it is with women's football, because it's the number one participatory sport on the planet. It's one of the easiest sports to play.
Wow, I wouldn't be able to say
took some practice. I'm not gonna lie. Yeah, I stand in front of the mirror every night.
Patisserie.
Patisserie. Yes.
Rolled off your tongue.
But I also think that the women's game has been founded on totally different values. This is what we've spoken about before. It's a lot more open. It's a lot more inclusive. You know, we don't hear homophobic, racist slurs at every single match that we go to. In fact, it's the exact opposite. It's a much wider, broader fan base. You see lots of young kids and lots of literally in the women's Euros. I was sitting behind two people that had very, very gray hair. And so I think that the potential for the audience is a lot bigger, because there's plenty of women and men in this country and non-binary as well, but who don't really like men's football because of those values and don't really feel like it's a safe place or a really nice and welcoming place to be. I also think that there's a lot more brands that can invest in women's football because of the more inclusive nature of the sport. And you look at the investment and the growth that's going into women's football and these types of values that are now growing, because consumers are becoming more and more, let's say, aware of, you know, what am I actually spending my money on? Do you have a D&I? Are you into diversity and inclusion? Are you more open? Because that's where I want to spend my money. I think the younger generation generation is much more interested in things like that. And the biggest reason, I think, is because the broadcast market's shifting so much. Because I think that before it was traditional linear TV, so we watch on Sky, watch on BBC, but now there's other players in the market, more OTT platforms, you know, Netflix coming in, Amazon Prime coming in and buying rights. And those are all less broadcast, let's say. And I think there's more space for women's to go into there as well. So it's opening up. And as well that most of our fans have been always on social media. So that's where we know that we can watch women's sports. And that's where I think the nature of sort of watching sports is going. The
key listen to this pod, they're going to believe after that.
No,
but I still not. Don't.
No. I think the two key things is the word think. So there's no sort of fact or any sort of data that sort of backs that up. That the women's game will grow in that space. There isn't anything previously in terms of research or that shows.
Grows into what space?
As in the biggest game, like big outgrows or as big as men's football. It has potential, but there's nothing in terms of data that shows.
There's a UEFA value of women's football, that business case of women's football. Have you seen that research?
That says what?
It sort of shows like in the next 5-10 years the actual like they put like monetary value on the growth of it, so they are starting to put numbers.
No, as in there's potential to get there, but as in things that have realistically been done and implemented. I think that's the difference, and I think all the stuff you've mentioned feeds into that, and it's great and it has the potential. But all of that is saying that they're gonna put people before profit, and there's no example where people have been put before profit in any part of society or sport in any example that you can tell me where that's been, because it's the right thing to do, and yes, it can have growth and we see the benefits of it, but there's no example of it ever being done.
No, but I didn't say that it's because people think it's like a CSR. From a business case, it's smarter to invest in women's and I think
all
people,
all of that, so smart, it's more of the product, business, everything, all of it is a better thing to do. It's never been done in any part of society, and it has it.
No, but I'm not talking about like,
you continue, I'm going home.
I'm not talking about like people, I'm talking about like from a business standpoint. No, it's not about like people before profit. I'm saying that the profit will be bigger, it will be more profitable, because the product will be a better product than the men's football. Is what I'm saying.
So the product would be better because of all the rubbish stuff that you get from the men's game. That you're saying, like in terms of the swearing
and all the other things,
and all, but I'm saying, no, even with all that, people are still investing in the men's game, and it's getting bigger and bigger. So they don't care if that's the bad stuff. So I'm saying that will continue to grow. But the women's won't. I don't think they'll catch that up, because people just love that.
All right. Well, we want to hear what you guys think about it. And I'm not talking about like in the next 2 years, FYI.
The Jetsons. We're talking in.
More I was like, nearly going home because you two were getting too into it.
We're talking in 30.
Two-way pod.
Barry, like, I'm not involved.
I'm not involved. That's too in-depth.
Should we take one more question, or should we?
Yeah, let's do one more.
All right. This one's a very easy one from Ellie Green 2002. Who's winning the WSL?
Chelsea.
Charlton. No,
what have
said,
you been eating?
No, Chelsea.
Chelsea.
Easy.
Yep, Chelsea. W Football_2023, so very modern this fan. Which player would you love to see come back to the WSL?
Why didn't it? This female player.
All of it.
In like from, because the WSL,
I've been thinking loads in my head, I'm half thinking like Kopi and goal, people score because she's big. Yeah.
Pauline Coates.
In my head I'm like
Carmen Walker.
Would she make it harder? Then I'm thinking Jill Courtard, centre half.
I'm thinking Julie Fleeting.
Like, I'm thinking all these Angie Julie Banks. Fleeting, like the goals that she used to score. Like, she was that good a player, Fleeting,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Is that amazing. Arsenal Vic Akers, the manager at the time, used to fly her in
from Scotland.
As and when he wanted to. If there was a game from Scotland. To play on a match day. She didn't train all week. And I'm flying Julie Fleeting because she was and you know the worst thing? I remember they flew into the Everton game when I was at Everton.
Yeah.
She scored a hat trick. And I'm like, she's a G, yeah. Because
maybe that's the
if
key.
You're on that level where you're just flying in for the big games, you are elite. She was Julie Fleeting was elite. But then I think of like Julie I used to love like
Andrew Banks,
Cameron Burke, like Angie
Marianne
Banks, like,
Spacey.
Kaz Walker, the goal. Yeah. There's too many players. I'd love to have seen them full time, because back then I was in all of these, but I'm like, these players are mad. Like, oh mad, mad good.
That was a good question. Yeah. Thank you, WFootball_2023. These girls are going to be talking about it until next pod. All right. Thank you guys so much for listening. As always, send us in your questions.
Good questions, guys. Like, questions that we can, like, really, like, dig our teeth into.
Yeah.
Like, top of the league, you're always going to hear that Chelsea are going to win that.
Yeah.
Favorite player, we're always going to tell you our favorite. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good questions.
But, like, you know, is women's football ever going to be as big? That was a good one. I like that one. No, Nelly McKenzie.
Lower down the pyramid.
Some grassroots. You want some grassroots?
You want some grassroots
questions. Send us in your grassroots questions, and we will see you all next week.
Bye-bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.